You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel. And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another disappointed episode of the Assembly Call, as tonight, your Indiana Hoosiers fall yet again to the Syracuse Orange, 112-110, in what was truly a double overtime thriller and a classic game and all of those things. But all I'm feeling here, as we're just minutes after the buzzer, is just frustration and disappointment because, damn it, we had them. You know, this was a game where Indiana played so bad in the first half, so bad. And it looked like just another one of those Syracuse games where Indiana didn't show up, and whatever deal with the devil that we had to make for Keith Smart to hit that game winner was just, you know, going to continue on. And in the second half, Indiana, the fight that they showed through the first 12 minutes to come back and get the game back, that's something that we haven't seen from an Indiana team in a game like this on the road in a long time. And to fight back the way that they did and to make so many big plays, but then to have such critical errors, not getting a shot off at the end of the first overtime, whatever that was on defense at the end of the second overtime, the turnovers, my God, the turnovers. I mean, we left a really big win on the court in the Carrier Dome. And so there's a lot to like, I think, about the fight and some of the individual plays that we saw tonight. But this game was always going to be a reality check for Indiana early in the season, the first game against a real opponent on the road. And the reality is, there's a lot to like about this team. I think there's a really good foundation, but there is a long way to go. And we're going to break it all down for you on this edition of the Assembly Call IU Postgame Show. I'm Jared Morris. I'm here with Ryan Phillips and the coach, Brian Tonsoni. You know, and there's a lot of places that we could go for the banner moment. You know, I'm not sure that you could pick out one moment for Miller Kopp. He did so many great things tonight for Indiana. A lot of those could be the banner moment. But I think, you know, going back to the end of regulation, it's got to be Trace Jackson Davis stepping up and hitting those two free throws to send the game to overtime. You know, not only was it Trace Jackson Davis hitting two clutch free throws have been such a bugaboo for him, but just the fact that he was out there because, you know, mere minutes earlier, as he's writhing away in pain on the court, the entire season is flashing, you know, before everybody's eyes. And, you know, when he checked in again with about 2.5 minutes to go, you know, you're thinking, okay, he's coming back in, but what's he going to look like? And he ended up scoring, you know, he had two or three dunks down the stretch, hit those free throws. You know, I thought in the first half, Indiana kind of followed Trace's energy. You know, he put up some numbers, but he didn't have his usual energy in the first half. And I thought in the second half, and especially in the first overtime, he was the Trace Jackson Davis that this team needs. And to step up and hit those two free throws with the game on the line, to send it to overtime, that was huge. That was an All-American play by Trace Jackson Davis. Unfortunately, again, the turnovers and some of the bad decisions did this team in. But, you know, on balance, it was another spectacular performance from Trace and, you know, doing it in different ways because free throws have been a big issue, but he hit some big ones tonight for Indiana. So he gets the banner moment. All right, our banner moment, as always, brought to you by our friends at Homefield Apparel, now in their fifth season sponsoring the Assembly Call and their first as the presenting sponsor for the Back Home Network. And, you know, as you think about what Christmas presents to get for your loved ones, make sure that your online shopping includes a trip to homefieldapparel.com. For the IU fans in your life, Homefield has the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you will find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison. And for fans of other college teams, Homefield probably has something for them too, considering their product line now extends to more than 120 different schools. I'm pretty sure Coach has at least one item from all 120 schools, and they've got unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it will be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through the Kelly School. I mean, come on, what could be better than that? So a win over Syracuse, that would be better than that. But otherwise, go to homefieldapparel.com. Use our promo code HOME, H-O-M-E, to get 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. Damn it. All right, time to move the ball, find the open man, get some opening thoughts from the rest of our team. Coach, we'll go with you. Coach's Corner, Tonsoni time. What's on your mind?
Yeah, tough game tonight. I don't think Indiana executed very well in the first half, and that's ultimately when the game was lost. You know, and mistakes should go to everyone who played and the coaching staff and all of that. But this isn't like game one for me. I thought the response in the second half, the adjustments made in the second half were tremendous. I thought Indiana was obviously the better team. They didn't play like it in the first half. I thought there was a few things that I would ask Coach Woodson about, zone alignment in the first half, but they fixed that in the second half. And then I thought, obviously, the last play is going to be on everyone's mind and everyone's going to, you know, be upset about that, running the double. You don't know if that was called. I would disagree if that was a call. That was a freshman who I thought was lost defensively quite a bit tonight, probably thinking they were still in the same defense that they were when they were down four or five. This program's in good hands. I know there's a lot of stuff in the chat mob about the honeymoon's over and all that. I just think that's crap. This program's different. This was not a good performance. There's a lot of things that went wrong, and we'll talk about them, but this team is in good hands. This program is in good hands. It's about to turn around. And most of the time, I'll remind people that most people picked a 10-1 non-conference record, and this was the game that we were going to lose. It just hurts a little more when just a couple small things fixed, and Indiana would have won the game. So tough. We'll talk about it, but not the end of the world.
Well, Ryan, as soon as we got on here to get this show started, you were already ranting, so why don't you do it for the people now?
You know, I got 3 points I want to hit in this rant. The first one is it makes absolutely no sense in a tie game with a few seconds left to be trapping. You can pick up full court man, you know, on the ball carrier to make him take his time up the court. But it makes no sense to have everybody pick up full court, and it makes no sense to try and run a trap. And what that led to was a give and go for Syracuse, which is what you are susceptible to on a trap. And give Syracuse credit for spotting it. And they had a guy sprinting right at the hoop, get the ball and shoot it. And he missed the shot, but he was fouled, and he was clearly fouled. And I don't blame Christian Lander for the foul at the end. He was out of position defensively because of the alignment that they were in. If that was not something that Mike Woodson called, then he's got a problem because his team was not listening to him. If it was something he called, it's an even bigger problem because when you are tied, you do not trap. When you're down, you do. You absolutely run a trap. You get a foul. If you can't contain the guy you run, you get a foul, whatever. That was asinine. It was a stupid move, and it led to, again, a reliable player and an incredible free throw shooter sprinting free to the basket to where Lander had to recover, and he was in position and had to foul. He was out of position and had to foul him. That's my first thing. I want to hear, was that right, or did Tamar Bates freelance or whatever? Either way, it's a problem. It's a real problem because it shows very little basketball IQ in that situation. The other thing I want to talk about is Parker Stewart. When Indiana's up two, fouls someone 90 feet from the basket in a situation where he didn't even have to be there. It was a rebound, and he's standing in front of the guy. And how often do they call that foul? Every single time. You're a guard on a big man just trying to harass him a little bit. You foul him. Syracuse comes down, makes both free throws in the middle of an 8-0 run that swung the game back to Syracuse's control. That's just stupid. Like, Parker's a veteran. That's just stupid stuff. And then he fouled Buddy Boeheim on the next play and fouled out. We needed Parker Stewart in that game. You need him late. You need his three-point shooting ability. And he gave up a foul for a stupid reason. No, there's no way you're stealing the ball there. You're just not. Like, what are you doing? Back off. You know they're going to call a foul if you go anywhere near that guy. And he not only went there, he stayed there and continued to sort of swat at the ball, gets a foul call, and then looks and shrugs at the official like, what'd I do? And it's like, you did a stupid thing. That's what you did. And it's just, it's like, you need that guy on the floor late to help spread the floor. And that's why it was harder to get the ball to Trayce Jackson-Davis in the post after he was out, because they do not respect Tamar Bates as a three-point shooter yet. That's why it was so difficult to get points later, because Parker Stewart wasn't on the floor to spread it along with Miller Kopp. The last thing I'll say, this team needs to play better out of the jump. If they play average in that first half, they win this game easily. They were down 16 at the break and turned the ball over 13 times in the first half. They had no idea how to attack that zone. None. Syracuse made one adjustment. They slid Buddy Boeheim up from the bottom of the 2-3. They slid him up to the free throw line to guard it a little bit. There are easy adjustments to that. You cut guys through instead of having them stop at the free throw line. You have somebody come up and set a back screen on him and cut somebody across. There are easy adjustments. Mike Woodson did not make any adjustments in the first half. And whether he was trying to or not, it didn't come out on the floor. The team was turning the ball over because they had no idea what to do with the ball. They would drive it. The other thing they would do, and this drives me nuts, this team's been doing this all the year, they drive into the crowd in the paint, and instead of throwing a solid pass, they'll kind of shovel it to a guy a couple feet from them instead of throwing a solid pass. If you cannot throw a hard, like solid pass to somebody, you shouldn't be passing to them. Throw it over the top if you're going to Trayce Jackson-Davis. Do not put the ball on the floor in a crowd. We talked about this during the Archie Miller era, but even the new players are doing it now. Little shovel or a little bounce pass in traffic never works. You might get one out of 20 to work. So this team needs to be, and the other thing is defensively, it seemed like they had no idea that the Boeheims could shoot. They were playing 2 feet off of them, not playing up on them. And the guys were just nailing threes in the first half. Gerard as well. This team needs to have an idea what it's supposed to do. And I felt that way in the Marshall game at times too. They need to have an idea who they're playing and who and what to do against certain guys. And they had no clue in the first half. None. And they were down 16 at the break. And they didn't deserve to be in the game. And they fought back. Credit to them for fighting back. I absolutely agree. The adjustments made at halftime were great, and they fought back, and this team has a lot of heart. Not disagreeing with that. But the way it started was inexcusable. This team did not look ready to play. They looked terrible on both sides of the court, and that needs to change. And that's on the team leaders, and it's on the coaching staff to get these guys ready to play.
At the 11-minute mark, he went to 1-4 across. At the 9-minute mark, he went to a ball screen action. And at the 8-minute mark, he put 2 post players down on the block all in that first half. And it resulted in turnovers and missed shots. So there were, Ryan, adjustments in the first half.
Yes,
and it just didn't work.
There were minor adjustments.
Maybe it was the wrong adjustments, but to say there were no adjustments by a coach is ridiculously wrong.
Well, here's the thing. He did make adjustments. The problem is the obvious adjustment.
I got it written down.
The obvious adjustment is to do what they did in the second half and work Race Thompson in the high-low and move him to the side so that lower guy doesn't come up. They did not do that at all. Not once. And
yeah, they talked about it at halftime and figured it out. That happens sometimes.
I'm saying
on the fly,
he made the adjustments at halftime, Coach. He did. It was a good job.
This was an execution problem by the players. There was one thing where they had an odd-man front against that 1-3-1 look where I would have gone to a 2-man front. And they talked about it. They decided not to go to a 2-man front. They decided to go to a 4 across at halftime. So they did make that adjustment at halftime. That's something I didn't necessarily agree with early in the first half. And then I thought, yeah, the stuff at the end of overtime was questionable too. So yeah, there's some things that coach has to own as well. But this was just a case of the guys coming out and not quite understanding how hard the zone was, how lengthy it was, and how good those guys were as shooters, and they need to be better to start the game. If they're 5 points better, they win the game.
It looked like they were surprised at what Syracuse was
sky falling.
It's like Syracuse has done the same thing for the last, 30 years, and it looked like they were surprised to be facing it. I get there was an adjustment to the zone. They probably didn't practice against that, but it's not a hard thing to figure out. You run, as you said, he made some adjustments. They didn't work, and he didn't make the one that was the obvious one. It felt like the team was not ready to play. And I can't, and the players, that's on the players, that's on the leadership, that's on that. They fought back. Credit to their leaders for fighting back and working very hard in the second half and in overtime. You lose in overtime like they did, it's a coin flip. That was a good game. But you got yourself in such a hole in the first half.
Let's be careful. Look, we're all really disappointed. You know, this is the joy and the danger of doing this show is the emotions are really raw afterwards. And you guys saw me when I came over here. I felt devastated when they lost that game. I feel gutted for how much effort they put into it to lose. And, you know, Ryan, I think, look, Coach had it written down on a piece of paper. Okay. If it's written down on Coach's paper.
I saw the adjustments.
But to Ryan's point, you know, look, the very first possession of the game, Parker Stewart just gets the ball and throws it out of bounds. So they weren't ready to play. And I think to a certain extent, that was somewhat predictable given it's their first time on the road and they're playing a really weird defense and they didn't get into a rhythm quickly enough. And, you know, two guys who really didn't get into a rhythm quickly enough were Trace and Race, who were turnover machines. Now, look, they put up huge stats, 31 points for Trace, 17 for Race. They had 28 rebounds between them.
Dominated.
They got it going. This team in the second half, when they realized, hey, two things to beat the zone. You got to get the ball inside the zone. And you've got to be decisive when you get it. You have to know where the ball is going. Where Indiana got in trouble is when they hesitated. And then Syracuse was able to do what Syracuse does and force turnovers. Look, they didn't do as well as we would have wanted against the zone. But and we'll get into the turnovers because the turnovers were unconscionable. 26 turnovers, you're just not going to beat many teams on the road. And I think the major source of disappointment is I think we all believe in our heart of hearts that Indiana is better than Syracuse. I think we all believe that, but we just, you know, a lot of those turnovers, credit to their defense, but a lot of that stuff was just unforced and not ready for what we were going to see. But we have to, in this first segment, talk about Miller Kopp because he was awesome tonight. Miller Kopp, who...
This is what you expect Miller Kopp to be, right?
Well, you know, Miller Kopp struggled the first few games of the season, but I think he was injured, and he looked healthy tonight. And I think he was the one guy in the first half who came out and looked like he was playing with purpose offensively. I would have liked to see Indiana, especially when Race Thompson was struggling to just be functional offensively, I would have loved to see Indiana move Kopp to the four and put him inside because he was decisive with his decisions. He can make that little shot. But he hit so many shots in the second half that kept Indiana alive and just kept him in it. His hustle at the end. And he played 48 minutes tonight. So I want to just tip my cap to Miller Kopp because he was terrific tonight, Coach. And, yeah. You know, look, you know, Trace hits the big free throws and obviously Parker hit a bunch of threes. But Miller Kopp, time and again, it felt like every single shot he hit was monumental. There were two late in the second half. One, I think, when it was 77-70, he hit a two. There was another one when Syracuse went up four and it looked like they were about to go on a little run and he hit a three to stop it. He was doing it all night long. And if this is the Miller Kopp that we're going to get in big games, that's going to be huge for this Indiana team. And that, to me, is one of the most important developments from tonight. And the three free throws at the end that he knocked down, ice cold.
Miller Kopp does what Miller Kopp can do. He's always going to struggle a little bit with his lateral move on defense and guarding people off the bounce, and that's going to be exposed all year long. But he fights, and he fights, and he fights. They did go to that lineup once, and Miller got a shot at the free throw line. But on the other end, there wasn't two bigs, and we gave up on two straight possessions, offensive rebounds. Yep. So there's that give and take. I agree with you. I thought that
went out.
Yeah. Well, was that when Trace was out?
They sat Trace at one point, I think.
Yeah, I forget the time on that. So, man, I thought that was a good suggestion. I saw you say that on Twitter, and I said, yeah, I even thought maybe playing Rob and X in the second half might have been a good adjustment because of the defense that Rob was playing. I don't think Syracuse attacked us as well when Rob was out there. I don't know if he was on a limit, and then someone said he might have tweaked his back on that drive when
he made a
bad decision. That he got hurt again, and that's why Christian came in. But we need Miller Kopp to shoot. And really, his pull-up game is nice. But the key play for Miller Kopp was when he battled and battled and battled for that rebound, fell down, and took a timeout. Miller Kopp will do the little things, and we got to keep remembering that when he does get blown by quicker guys with the ball, because that's just who he is. But he's a fighter, and, you know, it was nice to see him hit some shots and score some points. And again, as frustrating as this is, because I do think Syracuse, we just ran into a team that had gotten beat two or three times in the Bahamas and came back and got a little butt chewing from their coach and was at their home court and really was focused at the beginning. And Indiana wasn't focused at the beginning, and that cost Indiana the game. But boy, good to see Miller Kopp. Hope that continues. If he and Parker Stewart can do some of that. Now, again, you're getting open shots against the zone because that defense wasn't good that we played. You know, so you're getting open shots. A lot of people will be in the face of those two going forward. So I don't know that it'll always be 25, 26 points. But boy, hats off to that young man for what he brings to our program.
Yeah.
You know,
let me say something on Kopp first. I think that when you bring in a guy like Kopp from the transfer portal, this is exactly what you're looking for. And again, I'm not expecting him to get 28 points every game or anything, but he makes smart decisions with the basketball. He takes smart shots. He gets himself open. He hunts areas to get open. He doesn't create bad angles for passers. He moves to a good angle to make sure he gets the ball and can catch it correctly instead of hanging out maybe in the corner where there's a defender sort of nearby and creates a potential turnover. He knows how to play the game of basketball. And to, you know, 6 of 7 from the free throw line, 4 of 9 from three, he and, you know, Parker combined to be 10 of 21 from three. Indiana needs that and is going to need that. Not every game. They're not going to need 10 threes from those two guys every game, but they're going to need that shooting ability to at least scare teams into laying off of Trayce Jackson-Davis. You want to know why Trayce Jackson-Davis is having a much easier time scoring in the post this year than he was last year? There are guys around him who can hurt you from the perimeter. That's why. He's better, obviously. He's developed, but there's more room for him to operate. It's obvious looking at it, and the offense is spread out more. But Miller Kopp, I mean, you can't say enough about what he did tonight. He kept Indiana in the game at certain parts and was brilliant.
Okay, I want to talk about Race Thompson, but we're going to do it off the top of the next segment. So coming up, as we continue our breakdown of Indiana's crushing 112-110 loss to Syracuse, I'll point out tonight's meaningful moments that you might have missed, and then we will go inside the numbers to highlight the most important statistical notes from the game. I'm guessing turnovers will be mentioned. You're listening to the Assembly Call. Stick with us.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's going on? It's Christian Wofford. What's the only thing better than an epic buzzer beater? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join my guys, Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the Assembly Call after every IU game. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you, Christian. You are listening to the Assembly Call IU postgame show. I'm Jared Morris here with Ryan Phillips and the coach, Brian Tonsoni. We are breaking down Indiana's double OT loss to Syracuse. And guys, it is time for tonight's meaningful moment that you might have missed.
Meaningful moments that you might have missed.
So I want to go back to the first half when everything was just going wrong for Indiana. In a half that just felt so reminiscent of so many Syracuse games that we've seen since 1987. And I want to talk about Race Thompson. And there was a play, I think Indiana was, I think they were down 11, but it kind of felt like, okay, you know, if you can get this to single digits, you can start making a run. And Trayce had two chances down low, and he short-armed both of them, and he missed them. And Syracuse goes right down on the next possession, hits a three-pointer. It's a five-point swing. Boom. It's a 14-point game. Now, Miller Kopp would come back and hit a three on the next possession, but that just highlighted how big of a missed opportunity it was for Race's bucket on the previous possession, because you really could have started to make a run. And a couple possessions later then, Race got the ball, went up strong, got fouled, and scored, which was much better. And this to me, Ryan, was indicative of what we saw from Race tonight, which is, you know, he had some really good moments tonight. And I will say that despite how bad he was in the first half, I'm glad that Mike Woodson stuck with him because he played better in the second half. He played better in the overtimes. And he also had no choice because Jordan Geronimo was a disaster in the first half and you couldn't put him back on the court. But the problem with Race tonight, and I think the big disappointment, And what you expect more from a guy who's been around as much as he has, is just how passive he was with the ball. And again, you're playing against a defense that you don't play that often, and this is what Syracuse does. They make you indecisive, you know, they force you to kind of be thinking, overthinking about what you're doing offensively, and as soon as you hesitate, they've got a trap on you and a turnover's coming. But yeah. Race just had so many times where it just seemed like he didn't see the court, and even when he did see the court, he was hesitating, and he just couldn't get out of his own head. And you know, look, when you have a game like this, you know, I saw some people in the chat, you know, Race gave the game away. Look, you can say that about a lot of guys. A lot of guys made mistakes tonight.
You They're know, also
you
win, not in it late.
Team, you lose as a team. Yeah, and he made some big plays late, but it is true that his turnovers were killer, and he had the most of them, and a lot of them seemed preventable if he would just, you know, it's one of those things. He needed to be more patient but more decisive, if that makes sense. Like, there were times he needed to see what was happening and know what he was going to do with the ball before he got it. And it felt like too often he was getting it without an idea of what he was going to do, but then he was rushing once, you know, the trap would come or someone would get around him. And it was just off sync. And again, a game like this, you know, you got to get more from Race Thompson. And unfortunately, it just came too little too late.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Coach, you'll know about this. When guys get in a rut passing the ball, they guide the ball instead of snapping it off. And he was guiding the ball all night. I mean, these are passes that we've seen Race Thompson make a million times. And it was almost like he had the yips. You know, guy would be wide open. It was almost like he was overthinking. And he would just kind of guide it and be a soft pass. Syracuse guy comes in and grabs it. You know, one of his turnovers was, you know, Xavier Johnson threw a ball way ahead of him, and he tried to save it, and it went right to a Syracuse guy. I mean, so it's really seven, because you gotta blame that one on X. But the rest of it, I mean, he really was struggling. I mean, one of them was silly. He got an offensive rebound, and he got it in traffic, and there was a Syracuse guy hanging on his arm, and his instinct, he was under the basket, offensive basket, and his instinct was to put the ball on the floor. Like, if you're a big man, you get a ball on the block in traffic, you never put the ball on the floor. And he put the ball on the floor, it got knocked away, and he tackled Swider, and it was a foul, and they went down and shot free throws. And I think Swider hit one of them. That was about 2 minutes left or something. It was just, he just wasn't locked in tonight for most of the game. And I don't know what it was. Maybe it's a cross-country flight. Maybe he didn't like the bed at the hotel. I don't know. But he just seemed like he wasn't locked in for most of the night. Now, again, people saying that this game is Race's fault. I mean, in the second half, the last 10 minutes and overtime, without his passing to Trayce Jackson-Davis, you're not even in the game. And nobody else was doing it. I mean, nobody else was in that position and making those passes and making those reads and getting the ball to Trayce to where he could take over the game. So he was the reason, part of the reason for the big comeback. But also, yes, those turnovers are inexcusable for a guy who's a veteran like that, who we've seen make those plays over and over and over again. It just seemed like he had some mental block tonight with his passing on the offensive end. It was really hard to watch at times.
Coach, what stood out for you from Race or other meaningful moments?
Here's the ultimate thing. I thought it was one of his worst performance overall, and he almost had a triple-double.
He almost had a quadruple-double.
Yeah, I mean, that just tells you, you know, how solid this young man is, and everyone's going to have an off night at some point. He missed a couple layups at the rim, things that normally Race doesn't do, and it's just unfortunate in a double overtime, two-point loss type of game that he had that kind of performance. You know, he'll clean it up. That you know, Indiana had seventeen or fifteen turnovers from the post. They're fours and fives. That's just, again, the zone that Syracuse runs is not necessarily good, but it's long. And if you don't make quick decisions, then that length is going to tip a pass. If it's not, as Ryan said, thrown with pace. You want to make quick decisions and throw with pace. When Race did that, he was efficient. When he didn't, he made a lot of mistakes. And the thing is, he's going to be put in a position to make a lot of mistakes too. That's something that I would like fans to realize too, is that when you play the minutes you do as a young man like Race, and you are going to touch the ball almost every time in the high post, a good game, you're going to have three or four turnovers against this kind of defense. So, you know, the game was lost by everyone who wore an Indiana uniform and the coaching staff. Some players played better than others. No one in particular ever loses a game. I'll just state that. I hope everyone can just take a deep breath and take a sip of their beer or whatever and realize that the program lost tonight. Race had a bad night, especially in the first half. But Geronimo wasn't capable of playing in this game. And so, Race will bounce back, and we're gonna be fine.
Yeah, you know, one other moment that I thought was really big. You know, I thought Trace Jackson Davis had a ton of moments in the second half that were huge. And there was one in particular where, you know, Indiana went up 63-60, and I think it was on a Miller Kopp three-pointer, and you're feeling good. And Syracuse immediately goes on a 5-0 run, makes it 65-63. And kind of one of those moments where it feels like if they do something else good, the crowd's really going to get into it. And it's the kind of moment that for the past 4 years, it's always felt like has gone against Indiana, and things have started to snowball. And after a really uneven, you know, first half, I thought Trace was really ready for the moment. There was this really slow possession where just absolutely nothing is happening. It took us 25 seconds to get the ball inside the three-point line. And we finally did, and Trace was basically just like, F it, and just took a couple dribbles, shot clock running down, and just found a way to score. And then he runs down the court with the shh sign, you know, and whether you like that or not, whatever. But it was a huge basket where he basically just said, like, guys, I'm going to take this. Let's go. And then he goes down and gets a block on the other end that ended up leading to a run out for Rob Phinisee and, you know, snatched that momentum away. And, you know, those are the kind of plays in the second half that I was really impressed with Indiana. In the first half, they couldn't do it. You know, when they had a chance to cut into the lead, Syracuse would, you know, get a bucket, and they just kept him at arm's length. And then time and again in the second half, Indiana was able to make those plays, whether it was, you know, Trace just doing what he needed to do to get a bucket, Miller Kopp hitting a big shot. And so for all the frustration with this game tonight, Coach, and I get it, like we all feel it, you know, the thing that I think is probably the most important to take away from this, you know, win or lose, as we try to figure out, like, what is the character of this team? You know, what do we know about this team? I think what we saw tonight is a team that really fights together and believes in itself. You know, they played like crap in the first half, and they didn't roll over. Like, how many times, you know, in recent memory have we seen a first half like that, and the second half is just, you know, just kind of a run to the finish line, let's just play this out. And this was not that at all. Again, Syracuse, not a great team, but they were making shots and playing pretty well tonight. But this team really fought, believed in itself, overcame adversity. And so, you know, I don't think you're not going to take moral victories from this, but that's a positive about this team that is different, that I really liked. And just viscerally, as I was watching it, I found myself believing in them too. And that was good to feel about this team. And I think maybe in January or February, when Tamar Bates is a little bit more mature and Christian Lander is able to give you the good moments without the bad ones, this is a game Indiana wins. They just weren't ready to get it done tonight. And that is really disappointing. But I saw the seeds of a team that's going to be a lot better down the stretch. And that makes me feel good coming out of it.
Jared, I couldn't agree with you more on that. In years past, when there was a scoring drought, there was a second scoring drought. Or you had a lead, you lost a lead at the six-minute mark, and the game just went and got away from you quickly. That four-minute stretch or three-minute stretch at the under-eight timeout in the second half, where it was down to one, and then it ballooned up again. And to see an Indiana team fight back at the end, down 66-80 and find a way to stay in the game and win on an offensive rebound and two clutch free throws. And then it's a couple times in the overtime when they got a lead, gave it up, got a lead, gave it up. That does not excuse the poor decision-making, the over-helping on defense that we haven't talked about yet, the inability to guard the bounce, the turnovers, and again, some of those, you know, the decision to trap or not trap, whoever's decision that was. Those are mistakes that good programs don't make. And Indiana is what they are right now. They're a new program, put a lot of people together, lots of good pieces, a really good coaching staff. And this was a learning experience, and it just sucks that it has to be a loss. But I agree with you. This feels different. I don't want to get ahead of the game, but, you know, when I started watching in the late 70s and early 80s, you just expected to win every night. I had that feeling at halftime. I told my son, Brent, he goes, well, on to the next one. We got to win Notre Dame. And I said, hey, we're not out of this one yet. I got a feeling that coach is going to do something. We're going to get back. And we tied the game. And I felt that way right up until the last 30 seconds the last trap there at the end of that game. That's a good feeling ultimately to have as a fan of a college basketball program. We're going to win a lot of these and learn from it. So I agree with you. I think again, moral victories are horrible. You play to win the game. Type stuff, and that's important to remember. We're not here trying to make excuses for the bad things, but it feels different to me. And that's why I'm not all game one, you know, resting whatever face everyone said I was about the program. Disappointed, yes. Enthused about watching basketball again in Indiana uniform, yeah. So, good point.
We're adults here. We've been around the block. We can hold conflicting opinions in our mind. It's a bad loss, and yet there were some good things that you can take out of it that could project well for the future. Like, it's just... It's complicated sometimes, you know?
Yeah, and look, I mean, there are encouraging things that came out of this. This team clearly believes it can win games. I mean, it doesn't fold up the tent and walk away like you saw last year. There were three times in this game. One was just at halftime. But there were three times in this game where Indiana could have just said, all right, on to the next one. One was very late in regulation where Trayce Jackson-Davis made that play to get the rebound, get fouled, and make those free throws. Late, hey, Miller Kopp trying to fire up that three, getting fouled and hitting three free throws at the end. Like, they could have just run down and fired up a wild shot. They actually got it to one of their shooters. He shot it. You know, I mean, there is evidence. And look, the way they started the second half, it wasn't like some crazy run where crazy things were happening. It was methodical. They just went down, executed their offense, and were scoring, and were coming back in it. They hit some threes. Parker Stewart knocked down some shots.
It just seems crazy when you string together three-pointers, because it's like, what the hell is that?
But it wasn't... 40%?
40% on the night.
It wasn't some up-and-down running 40. Thing where Syracuse was turning the ball over. They just played solid defense and hit some shots. Like, it was a very simple formula, and then once... They started overplaying on Parker. They start going back inside. Like, it was a very simple formula, and they executed it perfectly, and all of a sudden, it's a four-point game. And Syracuse made it six, and then they made it three, and then Indiana made it three, and you just chip away. It just shows what this team's capable of, and the fact that they clearly believe we're not out of games when we're down 16 and throwing the ball all over the gym. And that is a huge positive moving forward, and that's because of Mike Woodson and what he's instilled in them. Absolutely 100%. It's a different program than it was a year ago. There are still some of the same bugaboos at times that show up, but it's also, you know, it takes time to completely change a culture and change the way these guys play. But I will say that is the most encouraging thing about this. It wasn't the three-pointers. It wasn't the free throws. It wasn't the, you know, the rebounding, which they annihilated Syracuse on the boards. The most encouraging thing was just the effort and focus to get this game back in the second half. They deserved to be in the game in the second half. They outplayed Syracuse completely in the second half. And then you get to overtime, and it's honestly, in most overtimes, are a 50-50 proposition. You have one bad possession, and you wind up on the back foot and losing. And they were still fighting all through those overtimes, no matter how tired they were. So that is incredibly encouraging heading forward. Syracuse is a very difficult team to play, and that is a very difficult building to play in. And Indiana fought and could have given up and did not. So that's the kudos to those guys and kudos to the staff for having them believe that they're in every game, regardless of how far they're down.
You know, I want to, before we move on to Inside the Numbers, really good tweet from Galen. He and Jay were actually at the game tonight. Galen says, well, that may be one where we don't fully understand the implications for another 3 weeks or so. I think that's really true. I think we're going to look back on this game probably in one of two ways, where it's like, oh man, boy, that was a harbinger of things to come, wasn't it? You know, if the team doesn't fix its turnovers, if they struggle to come out and play well in the first halves on the road, you know, we'll be able to say like, well, we kind of saw that in the Syracuse game. But if they do fix those things and we kind of see this fight and they start winning these close games, we'll say, boy, you saw the seeds for that with that comeback against Syracuse. So I think you can take, there's two different kind of routes that you can take. I think both of them are reasonable. I would urge you to do your best to hold both thoughts in your head. And then let's just see where this goes. You know, it's not all bad. It's not all good. You know, there was just, you play a double overtime game like that. But it was a fun basketball game, you know, like outside of white knuckling it.
We were living and dying with every shot. It's not that fun, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you see your All-American go down and think he may have a season-ending knee injury to him making the free throws to send you to overtime. I mean, there were just so many moments. But
And one more thing is, I do want to say that when you are on the road in overtime, the game massively favors the home team because officials are susceptible to the crowd. And so I will say that when you go to overtime on the road, you expect to lose that game. I mean, you just do. And as it happened, what was it? A 2-point game on the road. One play is the difference at the end. That's kind of what you expect. So to be super disappointed in the overtime, yeah, they made mistakes and there are things that were probably fixable and there's better things they could have done. But once you go to overtime, you know, if you lose, you lose in overtime. It's not that bad. The key was that they came back and fought in that second half and put themselves in a position where one shot doesn't fall and maybe they win it. So,
all right, guys, let's go inside the numbers now. This segment sponsored by the Power Rank, where our friend Ed uses data and analytics to make accurate football and college basketball predictions. By the way, Ed, a Michigan man, he's a big Michigan fan. Congrats to him on finally getting that big first victory for Jim Harbaugh over Ohio State. I know he's happy about that. Ed also writes an incredible March Madness guide every year, and we are going to have a special offer for you on that once March rolls around, so be on the lookout for that. For now, if you want sports betting advice with a PhD edge, or if you just like understanding sports at a more analytical level, you should subscribe to Ed's free newsletter. Go to thepowerrank.com/AC to subscribe. That's thepowerrank.com/AC. All right, guys, I want to dissect some numbers that tell the story of this game. That's what we normally do, but I actually want to pick out a couple of numbers that tell a really important macro story about this team right now. And there are a couple of trends that have to get reversed quickly if this team is going to avoid similar losses to this. So one is a number that we've already talked about, and that is Race Thompson's turnovers. He had 7 turnovers tonight. And it would be easy to kind of hand wave that away and say, well, this is just Syracuse. This is a one game thing, except for the fact that coming into tonight, Race's turnover percentage was double the highest it's ever been in his career. And I think so far what we've seen is a guy who has a little bit more freedom. He has some more offensive responsibility, and that's good. And I think we've all wanted that for him. But as this season goes on, he's got to get more comfortable with it and stop turning the ball over, because he plays too many minutes and has the ball in his hands too much to be giving away that many possessions. And he's better than that. So that's one. And the other one is one that we haven't talked about tonight. And that is that big number 5 next to Xavier Johnson's name. And that is personal fouls. And that is the reason why Xavier only played 26 minutes tonight. You look at the starters: Kopp, 48, Trace, 45, Race Thompson, 45, Parker Stewart, 39. You weren't getting a lot from your bench tonight. You know, Rob still isn't fully healthy. Christian Lander is getting better, but he's still a mixed bag in these moments. I firmly believe that if Indiana has Xavier Johnson for more minutes in the overtime, they win. You know, he had 9 assists. He was finding guys. He wasn't scoring tonight, but he was doing the best job of getting the ball where it needed to go against the zone. And again, if it was a one-time thing, not that big of a deal. But right now, Xavier Johnson's fouls committed per 40 minutes, 5.5. And that is, you know, more. Now, last year at Pittsburgh, it was 4.4. He's always been a guy who's fouled a decent amount, but it's off the charts right now. And, you know, as much as we love Rob and as much talent as Christian Lander has, he's got to be on the court in these games. So those two things right there, him being on the court more and Race Thompson taking better care of the ball, it would have led to an Indiana win tonight. And it's going to be the difference between wins and losses moving forward.
Yeah, and it's on the Xavier Johnson fouls thing. A lot of them are silly. They're, you know, guarding with his hands instead of his feet. He's a veteran. He should know not to do that. Being handsy with a guy, like, I'm sorry, the one he fouled out on, you could say, well, you know, guys grab each other away from the ball. But he literally he had 2 handfuls of jersey at one point. They're going to call that. Like, yes. Whether it's worth the foul call or not, you know, like whether officials should let that go, because guys do it on every play. If you grab 2 handfuls of jersey at one point, they're going to whistle you. Like, there is no, they don't care that you have 4 fouls. So some of them are just silly, and he gets into kind of talking things with guys, and then he kind of bumps them. And, you know, if he makes a bad play on offense, sometimes he goes and tries to, you know, reach for a steal or something. He's just got to be more settled than that. If you're the veteran point guard of a Big Ten team, you got to be more settled than that. And Mike Woodson's mentioned that as well. It's something he's got to be more focused about.
And you're not going to change his stripes. He is who he is.
Of course.
But you've got to reel it in like 5%. Like, if he was on the court for 5 more minutes tonight, Coach, I think Indiana wins. And so those, like, at the margins, these are the things that have to get better now as Indiana's getting ready to enter Big Ten play.
I think both things obviously have to get better. I wrote down in the last 4 minutes, we're seeing the Xavier Johnson experience. And we might just have to get used to it. I don't know if you can cleanse him from his turnovers, his fouling, some of the focus issues that he's had in his career, but he had 9 assists. And I believe Xavier Johnson really makes this team go. When he's playing well and on the court, Indiana is better. I did think Rob had a good run in that second half, after the second TV timeout. when Indiana kind of got the lead back and forth. I thought Rob did some good things defensively, especially, but also moving the ball in the zone. And then, but the fouls, what they do, Jared, is Xavier sits for a while. And then he came back in and had two turnovers because he was out of the flow. He wasn't into that. And so not only is the fouls defensively hurt, but when you get out of a rhythm as a point guard and sitting on the bench for that many minutes gets you out of a rhythm. And Rob has to play less minutes and play them well and then get out. And then Christian has his role too. But Xavier's our point guard, and he can't be getting those silly fouls. The most silly one for me was when he tried to take that charge. We had two guys ready to contest the two, and he slides over and was totally moving, whether his foot was in the arc or not. And that one, he's just got to trust his bigs to swat that and then crack down on the weak side rebounding, which in the Marshall game, we gave up a lot of those, you know, missed blocked offensive rebounds for him. But it's going to be a struggle. And Coach Woodson talked about that early in the summer and at the Big Ten things. I'm trying to get my point guards to understand we're looking for some good point guard play. And he's obviously identified it and is working on it. And at times it rears its ugly head with all three of our point guards. That is something that needs to be fixed for us to maximize this team.
And they're clearly addressing it with who they're recruiting. You know, I mean, they've
right.
The guys that are coming in that they've recruited as point guards all project as kind of rock solid guys.
Yep.
But yes, it is going to be a roller coaster, you know, because, you know, to your point, I thought Rob did play good defense. I just don't think we're going to be able to succeed very often with Rob on the court without Xavier, because Rob just isn't aggressive enough. And when he does get an advantage offensively, he's not able to take advantage of it. You know, there was a time in the first half where he broke inside the zone and he either had a little shot or he could have gone up for layup and he kind of passed it away. And it's like, Rob,
yep.
You know, I
agree.
Do that.
And I don't, I'm not going to go back and watch it, so I'm not going to have anyone else go back and watch it. But I specifically watched that 8 to 4 minute mark. Or whatever. I don't know. It was the 12 to 8 minute timeout segment. I think he played some time there. He did have a fast break layup where he went by, didn't make a pass to TJD that would have been contested, scored a layup. He did drive in the lane and then feed someone. So I thought that was his best moment of plays, but it might be Rob can only get in there, play 2, 3, 4 minutes and then get back out. Longer stretches might not be his best position, but that one stretch in the second half, I thought he really, really was the Rob Phinisee that we need. But that doesn't take away from your primary point is we need Xavier Johnson out there in a 50-minute game more than the 28 minutes he was out there.
Ryan, there's a note in the chat that you have numbers.
I do.
Oh, boy.
It might be a first in our 11-year run. Well, 46-31, Indiana dominated the rebound battle, and that kept them in the game, I think, especially defensively early in the second half. They were grabbing every single rebound. We're not giving second shot opportunities to Syracuse. I thought that was a key to them getting back into it. Both Trace and Race Thompson were doing a really good job on the boards. Trace finished with 16, Race Thompson with 12, and they won the rebound battle by 15.
How many offensive rebounds? Because that's always a key against the zone. Were a lot of those offensively too? Is that broken down anywhere?
We had 14.
14 yeah, offensive 14. Rebounds. 6 for Trace and 5 for Race. The other thing that I thought, there were actually two little things that I thought were funny. One is that Race Thompson, people saying this game was his fault or whatever, are morons because he was +9. On the night. So,
well, someone could call you a moron for putting trust in single game plus minus. So let's be careful. But
you beat me to it.
The other one I wanted to point out is that while Indiana did have 26 turnovers, they also had 26 assists. So they were moving the ball and they were getting, you know, 26 assists on 38 field goals is excellent.
You know, one of the things they have to do is they have to take this newfound freedom and play as loose and free as you can, but as tight with the ball as you can. So, you know, at one point in the NBA, the leader in turnovers was Magic Johnson because he was great at pushing the ball, but he was going to have turnovers. So you just got to limit your number. And some of the ones tonight were just ridiculous. Spinning in the air, Race Thompson spinning in the air to find a pass at the elbow, loose little handoffs in the lane with long, you know, 6'9" guys, arms out there.
Rob's drive to nowhere into a crowd of three guys.
Not securing the ball, loose ball, or rebounds and having it poked away. That's what's going to be so disappointing on film. I think turnovers were the name of the game. If you wanted to just pick one stat, because look at, we shot better. We shot 40% from three. What were we from free throws?
23 of 31. Yoga is on, right? Baby.
You know,
shot 55% from the field.
Rebounds, yes. Assists. The one thing was our lack of intensity and focus in the first half, and turnovers throughout the game. Turnovers reared their head at the last part of the regulation and in overtime. Turnovers, and it's a concern because it's been two or three games now.
Well, and they're momentum killers too, Coach. I mean, yeah. When you're playing well and you turn the ball over, it gives instant momentum to the other team, and that's what sparks a run for another team, especially if, let's say, you have a 6-0 run, they hit a shot, and then you come down and turn it over. Well, now it's a 6-4. You know, like right. You're automatically giving them points, and they don't score off of.
And I bet you're right, Ryan. If you go back to play by play, there were some times when we could have maybe got to 4 or 5 or 6
yes.
Once we got the lead. And I bet you'll find a really sloppy turnover. I know Xavier's had a couple in that situation, and that's the stuff. Again, this team is immature in handling the basketball right now.
No look pocket passes against the zone,
and they need almost to just be a little more disciplined in that area.
It was pretty much inevitable that this team was going to struggle with turnovers early in the season, you know, given their newfound freedom and playing, you know, with new guys. Like, I'll allow for having some turnover issues. But if you just remove, you know, Parker Stewart just throwing the ball out of bounds and Jordan Geronimo doing whatever the hell he was doing on his couple turnovers, like those three or four possessions.
Tamar had one of those too.
You know, Lander had a turnover in overtime where he doesn't catch that pass. But you know what? He saw if he catches the pass, he's rifling a pass to Parker Stewart before he lands for a wide open 3-pointer. It's like, you know, that's the kind of turnover where a guy sees a play, he's trying to make a play, it doesn't lead to a run out the other way. It's like, all right, I'll live with that turnover.
Offensive,
but just throwing it out of bounds or some of the other ones, it's like there's no what you want with a turnover. Is you want some risk reward. You know, you want it to be like you're trying to make a play that it's going to be a good play if you make it, and maybe the pass just isn't right. You know, like the, you know, Lander had another one in the overtime where he threw that little lob to Race Thompson because the Syracuse guy was loafing back and it almost got intercepted, but it's a bucket. So it's like if that gets intercepted, if that guy is a quarter step quicker, it gets intercepted. Was that a bad play to make? No, I think the risk reward is good there. You know, but we had some turnovers where there was literally no reward. It was just, you know, kicking the ball out of bounds or doing nothing with it. If we just get rid of those. So that's the thing as you walk out of this game is it feels like there are real addressable concerns that can get better to make the team better, as opposed to so many postgame shows where we've come on here and it's like, do these guys even want to be playing together? It's like, that's just foundational. You can't fix that. The stuff that lost Indiana this game is fixable. So feel good about that, Hoosier fans. Feel good about it. No matter how bad Ryan made you feel during his opening rant.
Just being honest.
It was controversial, though. It was very controversial. All right, let's move on.
I got it down on paper.
Yeah, well, if Coach has it down on paper.
I'm going to mail it to you. Priority
mail.
I'm going
to go back and look at those adjustments and just see how aggressive they were.
Oh, I don't think they were good, but they made them. You said no adjustments.
Well, I should have said no meaningful adjustments.
We agree now.
Okay. I was on a roll, Coach. Just let me go, all right?
All right.
Hey, I'm in your corner all the time. I got to find my spots.
Coming up, it's time to hand out our game balls, the Hoosier Hustle Award. We'll get a lingering question from the audience, and then we'll talk about Indiana's next opponent. A lot still to do here on this show. Stick with us on the Assembly Call.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of The Assembly Call.
Thank you, Jordan. You are listening to the Assembly Call IU postgame show. Catch us live immediately following every IU basketball game, plus every Thursday night at our website, assemblycall.com. And make sure that you sign up for our free IU Hoops email newsletter. Over 9,000, we're nearing 10,000 of your fellow IU fans have subscribed. The coach, Tony Adranya, is hard at work right now, banging out the postgame email that will be in your inboxes tomorrow morning. Plus, we do the weekly roundup. You can join for free at join.assemblycall.com. That is join.assemblycall.com. I'm Jared Morris. I'm here with Ryan Phillips and the coach, Brian Tonsoni. Gentlemen, it is time for the game balls. This is going to be an interesting decision, I think. I think there are two very distinct places that you can go with your game ball that would both be good choices. And so we will let coach go first.
Oh, man. It's kind of hard to give a game ball and a loss. And now you have like two or three choices. It doesn't make sense, you know, because it's a loss. I'm going to go Miller Cop. And maybe that's just glad to see that that's what we expected and what we need, and it came out. But I thought overall he did a lot for this team. And we know Trace Jackson Davis is going to bring it every night. The more that he, Cop and Parker Stewart can do what they did tonight, we'll be in a lot of games and compete for a lot of wins in the Big Ten. So I'm going to give it to Miller Cop.
I'm with you on Miller Cop. I actually thought without what he gives, and the reason why I go Miller Cop over Trace, even though Trace had better numbers and, you know, is the better player and was huge down the stretch, is I think if Miller Cop doesn't do what he does in the first half, the game might be out of reach by halftime. Indiana might be down 20. And so I thought Miller Cop kept Indiana just within shouting distance and allowed them with that big spurt in the second half, you know, to get it closer. And he continued to make big shots that, once again, when Trace was able to come back in late, they were in a position to still be close enough to come back because of what Miller Cop did. And obviously the big free throws down the stretch. So, and to me, it's totally unconscionable that Miller Cop doesn't get a shot at the end of the first overtime. You know, he secured that rebound. He needed to get a shot. Somehow, some way, he's got to get that shot. Because I think
Woodson
everybody...
said they were trying to run the same play they ran in the second overtime for him, and it just...
Yes,
run right.
I'm disappointed because you really feel like you really felt like it was going in because he just had that look on his eye, you know, look in his eye tonight. So Miller Cop gets my game ball. Ryan,
I'm gone. I think Miller Cop is a fine choice. I think that he's the other guy, but I got to give it to Trace for 31-16 on national television to sort of continuing to announce his presence with authority as an All-American and making that play at the end of. At the end of regulation, you don't do that. You don't go to overtime. And so he made the biggest play of the game, in my opinion, by getting that rebound and, you know, going up. And I really wish he would have made it and had the and one, but you know, he was fighting through some contact there and just had the stones to knock down both those free throws too. In a tough spot, a guy who struggled with his free throw shooting to make them both right there. That was an All-American play. Those were All-American free throws. And it was an All-American performance tonight, especially after banging his knee. So
I'm watching the game, and my wife and son were down here. And as Trace got the ball for the two free throws at the end of regulation, I'm just watching him, and I'm like, before each one of them, I was like, he's got it. He made it. And when he got the next two free throws in the first overtime, I just watched how he got the ball and how he set up for a shot, and I was like, he's going to miss it. He's going to miss it. I think that probably within maybe about a 5% error, I could predict whether Trace is going to make or miss his free throws just based on how he sets up for them and kind of the focus, how he's focusing on the rim, how he sets up for his shot. When he's really focused on his free throws and his form is in line, it looks good. And you just feel like it's going in. And then there's other times where it feels like he's just not quite as locked in on his focus on the free throws. And I feel like if he could just fix that, you've got a really good free throw shooter there. So, you know, those free throws in the overtime would have been big for him to get two. But the two that he hit at the end of regulation, obviously huge. All right, it is time now for the Hoosier Hustle Award. Sponsored by our friends at Evansville Security Services, based in the hometown of IU legend Calvert Chaney and hopefully future legend Christian Lander, Evansville Security Services provides off-duty police officers to businesses and individuals throughout Indiana. Remember, prevention cannot be measured, so let Evansville Security Services help you prevent a bad outcome today. Go to evansvillesecurityservices.com to learn more. That's evansvillesecurityservices.com. Who's your Hustle Award, Ryan? Who gets yours?
Well, if I can't, if Trace doesn't win the player of the game, I'm giving him the Hustle Award for all the, for the 45 minutes of work he put in and everything he did. So I'm going to go with Trace there, I guess.
Yeah. Trace is my
Trace.
Yeah. Yep. This one's, I mean, just the fact. Okay. What were your thoughts when he's writhing around in pain on the ground? I mean, outside of obviously just feeling awful for him and all just the how bad you would feel for him. I mean,
after watching the replay, I didn't think it was a season ender because they knock knees. Maybe you get a bone bruise at worst or something, but I knew it wasn't like a ligament or something like that. That happens all the time, and you cannot walk for a few minutes afterwards if you hit it really hard like that. And it's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to a lot of people who played basketball or, you know, any of the, you know, sports like that. You bang knees, it really hurts. And once they showed the replay, I was like, okay, he's going to be fine. Maybe at worst, he misses a game or two with a bone bruise or something. But I was not feeling terrible about it. I did think he was going to miss the rest of the game, which I thought game over, obviously. And then when he came back in, obviously he just was fantastic.
I was thinking, this is honest. My honest thought was, oh my gosh, we got to do shows the rest of the year without Trace Jackson Davis post-game shows. And we were so looking forward to, even in games like this where we lost, this is so much more enjoyable than what we've been doing in the past with long losing streaks and everything. That was the first thing. One, obviously, you want the young man to be okay. Let me backtrack. But once he was out, and I thought, oh, my gosh. This year that we were so looking forward to, we had six games. And then I was actually shocked they put him back in because it was down 8 or 9 with, you know, 2 or some minutes. I thought, man, do you want to risk further injury? But obviously it was a knee-on-knee situation and nothing that he could injure. They would not risk him in that situation. But, that was gut-wrenching to sit here and watch.
Let's hit some lingering questions here. Andrew says, are we seeing a trend with Parker Stewart shooting? Absolutely. 6 for 12. This is a guy who we know that he can make shots. He's much better as a catch and shoot guy than off the dribble in his history. And that's the role he's playing at Indiana. Now, I don't think he's going to get 12 attempts every game. You know, part of that is playing against a zone and he was ready for him tonight. But yeah, Parker Stewart so far on the season, he is shooting 47.4% on 38 attempts. And I would say keep getting him more shots. As many three-pointers as he can handle, you want to keep giving them to him. So
all reversal, get the pass right at his chest, he's going to make it.
Yes. I don't know that he'll shoot 47.4%, but...
Coach, you'll agree with this. His shot is the same every single time he shoots.
Oh, it's pure.
Yeah. Every single time.
He and Miller Kopp, just nice form. Yep. You know, they don't get a whole lot of elevation, but who cares when it goes in? And it's going to be really nice. It's going to be really nice because they're going to have to really double. People are going to double. Purdue's going to double. They double everyone. Teams are going to have to double TJD, or he's just going to – I mean, Marshall waited until last 10 minutes or so to try to double him. And then you're going to be able to have to kick it out and shoot the three. And Kopp and Stewart are heating up just in time for Big Ten season to get started, and that's going to be a plus.
Who's the last guy that you felt as confident when he shot the ball that it was going in? JBJ?
No.
Probably.
Jordy for me.
Hulls.
Hulls?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Halls. Because JBJ would go on 0-8 stretches sometimes and then hit 6-7. You know, so that was I was always kind of questioning whether he
JBJ shot from the parking lot though, dude. He never passed up anything, so you had to feel somewhat confident.
Yeah.
James Blackman Jr. slander. That guy had a beautiful shot. Come on.
He did. Oh, he had a gorgeous shot, but he would also go in ruts where he would miss a lot in a row and then hit a bunch in a row. It wasn't like a steady, like, you know, you always felt like until the end, obviously, Holes would hit like 2-5, 3-7 in a game. You know, he'd always make a couple. He was never going to take an over.
Okay. Let's do one more here. And this is from Stuff and Things, because it is the biggest storyline coming out of this game. Can anything be done to address turnover issues midseason? Maybe just more playing time together and building chemistry. Coach, yes. I think a lot of times you're going to see teams struggle early with turnovers, especially a new system and with a roster this new. I do think this is going to get better. I'm concerned about the turnover issue, but I'm not panicking about it yet.
Two things. Get Iowa on the schedule because they don't play any defense and our turnovers will drop, and that'll make us all feel better. Honestly, you got to work on it in practice. You got to emphasize a lot of film. But the question is, the real serious thing is, you don't want to pull back on their freedom, because this is a fun team and they're going to have to play somewhat free and easy. So it is a fine line. Yes, he makes them run if there's 12, but if you become hesitant because you don't want to go over 12 turnovers, you're going to miss opportunities. And Jared, your description of risk-reward earlier is something the coaches are going to have to decide with this team. How's the best approach to bring this number down? They turned the ball over against Louisiana. Louisiana got up in their grill. They turned the ball over against the 2-3 zone, and not just any zone. Boeheim recruits to it with long, lengthy guys. Other teams that'll play 2-3 zone won't present what Syracuse presents. So the high turnovers have come at different defenses for the first time. So maybe the more experience they get, the more film they get, the more emphasis. But boy, I don't want Woody to harp on it so much to where we don't play as free offensively. And that's part of Race's problem. He's having a lot more opportunities to do stuff with the basketball than he ever was trusted before. And ultimately, that's a good thing. When this starts coming down and that freedom stays, then you're going to see very efficient offense. And that's a hope. I can't guarantee that. I wish I could. But you just got to keep plugging away and keep teaching. One of the things about coaching that I like to talk to our staff about, and every staff, you got to keep teaching, no matter what the result is, no matter how disappointed you are, no matter where you're at, find the things for this week, teach, and then build the next week and teach and teach and teach. And I think that's what Woodson's all about.
By the way, if your answer to the question that I asked wasn't James Blackman Jr., it better have been Yogi. So
yeah,
shame on all totally of you who Yogi. Didn't pick Yogi instead.
Yeah, Yogi's the answer. I'm sorry, guys. I completely blanked on Yogi.
Which wasn't always the case, but by his senior year, you did have
he was money.
Great faith in Yogi.
Especially if he was dribbling into it on the break.
Man. Well, I feel better after doing this show. I was really just darn near despondent when that final buzzer went off.
He was saying some things he can't say on the air, folks.
It was quite surprising, Ryan, you know, from our leader to hear such language to start the show. That wasn't live. It was behind the scenes.
The sirens you heard were the language police.
It was a raw moment. I thought, you know, I believed we were going to win. I'm guessing they all were probably saying the same things to themselves as they were walking to the locker room. So, you know, it hurts more when you actually believe in the team.
Yeah.
You know, because then you're like, damn, you know, I was expecting to win. I should have won. It's different when you just feel like every game is a march to disappointment.
Here's
another
one.
This wasn't that.
Yeah.
No, this wasn't that. But it was disappointing nonetheless. Okay, so coming up, what a tune-up with Big Ten play starting on Saturday. Before that, we have Assembly Call Radio on Thursday night, so we'll have a good lineup for you there. I think Andy will be here for that. Someone will be here for that. We'll have two or three people here for Assembly Call Radio on Thursday night, as we always do. And then Saturday for the Nebraska game, Indiana opens Big Ten play. Do any of you guys have thoughts on the Cornhuskers real quick as we look to see what they've done so far this year?
A Saturday morning game. Wonderful.
Oh, gosh. Won't you be excited?
Here's a concern. I haven't watched them play, but Hoiberg likes to spread people out and drive and find mismatches. And what has Indiana struggled with? Containing the bounce. So Parker Stewart, Miller Kopp, who are they going to match up with? Hoiberg hasn't been successful, but he runs some good stuff and usually keeps Nebraska in a game. That has me concerned, the dribble drive action that Nebraska has run in the past.
Yeah. We'll see if the Hoosiers are ready. It'll be interesting to see how they come out in that game. You know, this is one of those games you hope, again, you hope that the team takes positive stuff from this and that it doesn't linger. And I think they will. But, you know, we'll see. It's going to be a big test. It's, you know, the Big Ten opener. That's a, you know, look, that's a home game against Nebraska. Obviously, if you have thoughts of being an upper division team in the Big Ten, that's a game you have to win. Especially, well, we're not going to talk about the game that's coming after that.
Although go 1-0 in the Big Ten.
That's a streak that we need to break also. All right, guys. You are listening to the Assembly Call IU Postgame Show. Remember to check out our friends at Home Field Apparel. Use the promo code HOME, H-O-M-E, at checkout to get 15% off your first order. Guys, it is time for last call. Let's get some final thoughts on this double overtime loss. Ryan, why don't you go first?
Disappointing. Just incredibly disappointing that they couldn't pull this one off. But as I said earlier, I mean, the heart and determination they showed in the second half and the ability to just, again, it wasn't some crazy sprint where they just, everything went wrong for Syracuse and everything went right for Indiana. It was a methodical approach to chip away at that lead consistently and get it back. And then, you know, you had your star make some star plays down the stretch to get you into overtime. Disappointing the way they started. I mean, honestly, that is something that's got to change. I don't know what it is, but that start is unacceptable. And that first half was unacceptable completely. They just look lost, completely lost against a team that you know exactly what they're going to do. And so that it was a tale of two halves. They scored 55 points in the second half. Were incredible offensively, played much better defense. The first half, let's just burn the tape and forget it happened. Not the team. The team needs to watch that tape repeatedly to be reminded of what happened. But for us, let's never watch it again. But you just hope they can build on this. Look, this is a disappointing loss, and there might be a little bit of a hangover from it, especially because it went to double overtime, and it was their, you know, another big game for them. This is one they wanted to have, and they didn't get it. It's a tough place to play. It's a tough team to play. Regardless of their record, it's always difficult playing Syracuse because the way they play is not like anybody else. So, a difficult, difficult loss. I think Indiana put itself in a huge hole and fought as hard as they could and fought valiantly to come back, but came up short. Got to be better. Got to be better in the next one. But there are encouraging signs because of what happened in that second half.
Hey, Coach, real quick, bracketology-wise, you know, KenPom rates games. This game is rated as an A. I mean, it's a road game against a top 75 team. Syracuse isn't great, but they're probably a bubble team. Like, this is a game that if you win, it kind of helps because it shows that you've won a road game, so there's an opportunity cost to losing it. But this isn't going to be one. We don't anticipate Syracuse to be bad enough where you're looking at this as like an eyesore on the resume, right?
No, you just hope they don't, you know, continue to go south. They were thought by a lot of us to be 6, 7, 8 seed starting the season because of the way they ended and having Buddy back. As you saw, when he's ready, he could take over a game, and he did take that over tonight. They lose to Colgate like 2 days before they go to the Bahamas. Then when you lose 2 games in the Bahamas, that's nothing really. Auburn and I forget who else they lost to. Not bad programs. Anytime you have a 3-game in a row tournament, so you kind of can't look at those as you would 3 games in a row with spacing. I wouldn't be. Syracuse is always in the tournament. It's always a bubble team for us at Delphi Bracketology, and we always don't like them because are they in, are they not in? But that's a top 45, 50 team. If that's the case, it won't hurt us. It would have been nice. We only have another opportunity against a Power Five. The big issue is that the non-conference schedule does not have a lot of marquee quad one, quad two type wins available, which means you're going to have to win 12 or 13 Big Ten games, and you're going to have to beat some teams on the road in order to get some good wins from a bracket situation. But Syracuse was a disappointing team to this point, but they have the capability to be good, and especially in that ACC, they can get up to fourth or fifth in the ACC quite easily. Especially if they shoot the ball like they did early. So that's something to remember too, is you see the record and you know they lost to Colgate and all that stuff, but you got to throw some of that stuff out early season. You know, this was a good team. I think IU is better. should have been better and should have won the game. And the team showed up in the second half that I expected. That's my final thought. The team showed up in the second half, and they just can't do that. You can't do that against opponents that are good on the road and expect to win. That's the disappointing thing. And then the one final thought we didn't talk about, it, someone in the chat mentioned it. TJD had that final play stopped. Lander was trying to do the right thing and trying to fly back and get a block, and Lander fouls. But I don't think that guy scores because TJD walled up really, really well. But that's why you don't double the ball in that situation. You can put pressure and turn them to try to eat up some clock. So if that was a coaching decision, I'm sure they're going to be hating that on the fly back if Tamar went early, because that's what they were doing to get back in the game. They were trapping, and then once it got over half court, they were fouling. So either they didn't call it off, or Tamar thought they were still in it. One of those two things happened. Regardless, bad execution, bad communication, that needs to be fixed. But, man, I like watching this program right now, and I'm going to try to focus on that and try to keep perspective, because Indiana loses more games. But this is a lot more fun this year than it was last year, especially the way they came back.
Yeah, it's perspective is so important. You know, we're all so excited about the new direction of the program, so excited about some of the play that we've seen from this team in spurts, you know, and you start thinking about getting a win and you're 7-0 heading into Big Ten play and how great that is. You know, and we want everything to happen now. You know, we want to be back to, you know, being a top 25 team now and being a contender in the Big Ten now. And, you know, look, this is a program that right now, just for perspective, is ranked 31st in KenPom, that has not finished that high in KenPom in the last 5-6 years, you know? So this program has a ways to go, and clearly right now they're not ready to win a road game at Syracuse. But they showed us some things tonight that we haven't seen in a while, some shot making, some fight, some togetherness, you know, some ability to weather adversity and to make big shots in key situations. And the fact that they're All-American and their leader is living up to those, you know, those preseason expectations. So I understand everybody's disappointment. I feel it. I think we're always going to look back on this game as a missed opportunity that Indiana should have won, because I think we believe, and rightly so, that Indiana is a better team than Syracuse. But all that mattered is that Syracuse was the better team overall tonight, in large part because they just played better the first 20 minutes. And that's disappointing. But I think there's some positive things to take from it. And so we'll have to see 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks down the road, you know, what was this game a harbinger of? And hopefully it's a harbinger of a team that continues to make shots, that continues to fight, that continues to grow together. Because if they do, they've got a high ceiling and they've got a lot of potential to be better. Unfortunately, they just couldn't put it all together for 50 minutes tonight and come away with a victory. But we'll do it again on Saturday and hope to be better. All right, that will do it. If you want to see us do the show live and be part of the live chat, make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/assemblycall. And don't forget to go to join.assemblycall.com to join our free email newsletter. Special thank you to Bob Thompson for the music that you hear on the show. Special thanks to John Ringer of Riggs Design for designing our logo. And thank you for listening. We'll be back to talk IU hoops again with you on Thursday night and then again on Saturday. Until then,
take it from me, Yogi Ferrell. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
All right, I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
I lined up all the 2013 guys for the segments tonight. Christian Wofford, Jordan Hulls, Yogi Ferrell was hoping to exercise some demons.
I love how much thought you put into that. Like, truly, I'm not being sarcastic. I really do. The demons. You can never tell with me, but
the demons live on.
Yeah.
Demons. That's okay. Whatever deal we had to make with the devil for Keith Smart's shot to go in, if it means that we never beat Syracuse again and they're all either just complete ass whoopings or just total devastating games like this one, it's fine. We won the most important one, and we'll take that. And maybe at some point before we die, we'll beat Syracuse again.
We can only hope, my friend. We can only hope.
This is a game. If this is year two or three in the Woodson era, we win by 10 or 15.
Yeah, or the criticism.
Given the same structure of the teams. I'm just saying that because there's so many players learning and so many coaches learning, and they're all learning how to play together, that there's so many things that don't function well cohesively yet.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a game we win by 15 or 20, or it's a game we lose, and the questioning is a lot more harsh on the postgame show. You know, this is a... I don't know, it's the kind of game you lose in a coach's first season with a new roster, and winning on the road is hard. So,
especially at that place, that's a tough place to play.
I know. And Jay was there, who's just bringing bad luck with him everywhere he goes. Thanks, Jay.
That guy.
That guy needs to go to any more games. We're going to make a declaration.
Who's on Saturday?
That is a good question. So, coach has game. Andy's daughter has a game. It's my wife's birthday. And so I think right now we're waiting to hear from Galen. If he's not going to the game, he's going to host. If not, then we'll figure it out. I am most likely not going to be because it's my wife's birthday. So I'm...
Yes.
If I need to in a pinch, I probably will. But yeah, Jen says
hopefully
Ryan
it's a
hosts.
Quick and dirty 45-minute show because they blow him out.
You want to just do a solo show, Ryan? It can just be a complete rant. I'll set up StreamYard. All you have to do is literally all you would have to do is come in here and hit go live.
But I wouldn't.
That's it. We've simplified this process so much.
Wouldn't have the music and stuff though.
That's okay. We wouldn't need music.
But based on the reaction to my rant tonight, the people would not like that.
you know, it's you're the one that they love to hate. You know, every show needs a, you know.
Well, it's because I tell the
someone
truth.
That does the things
people don't
that
like
you
hearing
do.
The truth. I'm sorry, people want to hear sunshine and rainbows.
Okay, but you hide behind that. Sometimes it's not true. Coach had things written down tonight that disproved some of the things that you said, and they were on paper.
First of all, I was emotional, and I said no. I meant no meaningful. There was no meaningful adjustment. Yeah, they went 4-1 flat for a little bit, and it did nothing. It did absolutely nothing.
Now that is true. That is absolutely true. And I'll tell you, Ryan, where I agree with you is when you have that 1-3-1 look to put a two-guard system up there, and what they tried to do was
split the top guy.
They tried to flood it on the backside with two guys baseline and throw over the top, but that caused a lot of turnovers.
Yeah.
And an interesting concept.
Because Syracuse is athletic. Against a non-athletic team, you can throw that over the top.
Right. The length. And so both of those things, and then the high ball screen didn't work either. So, there was that. I don't think they were very efficient. Here's an interesting thing against zone, too. Some people, I've always been taught odd man front, even front for your offense, just do opposite. But I won't say where I got it from, what coach, because it's a rival. But when I was learning the game of basketball, to match up like a 3-2, play a 5-out and put your best driver on the worst defender and just pass the ball around and tell your driver to go.
He gets a step.
And then they all got – it's a zone, so they all drop. Then you fire out to your three-point. It was so not traditional basketball. I had to sit there and think about it. And it makes sense that they'll match up, and then you can just put your best driver on their worst defender and you got to –
Yeah, that's the thing is you can set your guys up wherever you want against the zone, and those guys will have to be there. They're not going to switch sides midway because they trained to play that side. So Tony posted it today, and he was talking about how Syracuse is it's nominally a 2-3 zone, but it changes its look all the time.
Yep.
And sometimes it's a 3-2. Against when Indiana played them in the NCAA tournament, it looked more like back in 2013. I hate to bring that game up, guys. I'm so sorry. But it looked more like a 3-2 in that game more because they were playing high to come out to Watford and come out to Hulls and come out to Oladipo. And it really does shift depending on, you know, what they're doing. And today what they had the two. They did the 1-3-1 look for a little bit, but they also had the two and two at the bottom. And then they had Buddy Boeheim playing up as like, it was almost like a 2-1-2 almost.
It was almost a 4-out-1-in defense too. They had spread those when we started hitting threes at the start of the second half. Then the adjustment was to bring those forwards up, and it was four guys above the free throw line. And that's when we went high low for them,
which is the obvious move.
If you're going to allow it in there, that's why Syracuse doesn't play great defense. They
never
gimmick
has.
You. They gimmick
They're like
you
181st in adjusted defensive efficiency this year.
But they use their length. When they block
they always have athletic
shot
tall
in the championship,
with
They have a 6'11 guy who can run out, and he's got a 19-foot stretch and block Heinrich's three in the corner. Well, every high school coach in Indiana wanted to play 2-3 zone after Indiana, and they're playing 2-3 zone with a 6'1 center who had chubby little arms and couldn't get out to cover the corner. It's not the same. That he does a good – it's the truth. It's a good – you can't put a 6'1 chubby guy in 2-3 zone.
He specifically picks players to play that zone too.
Exactly.
Guys like Michael Carter Williams. That guy had very little discernible basketball skill. He's a point guard, but he really couldn't do a whole. He couldn't shoot. He wasn't a great ball handler as a point guard, but he was like 6'5 with like a 6'9, 6'10 wingspan.
Absurd.
He was great
length
on the perimeter.
And then offensively, I read something in the Athletic or something. Boeheim doesn't do much athletic, and you saw it today. It's bully ball. Dribble in, shoot. If someone helps, pass. Okay, we'll run a high ball screen, or high we'll just run screens, you off two pin screens, catch
pinch
and shoot.
On the shooter, yeah.
It is open gym on offense at Syracuse, and that's why they say they always get better at the end of the year, because then they figure out who can shoot and who can pass to, and
the
then
team
that
gets
zone
used to
works
playing with each other.
And you win on a first round and have to play Syracuse with one day prep. It's hard. It's just hard. That's why they make their runs. It just makes me sick to my stomach.
Beat the stupid program.
By the way, hit a milestone today. You want to hear about it?
Yes.
Lost 30 pounds since the summer.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
You that got me awesome. By three.
Damn.
I'm only at 27. I'm on a plateau right now.
Job, holy crap. Coach. I need to get some work done. I am
since
going
July
in the other direction. Okay.
Yeah, I weigh less now than I did when I lived in Bloomington.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Congratulations.
Your turn,
thank
Jared.
You. I had to tell somebody.
Yeah, it is my turn. It
that's
really
great.
Is my turn.
That's great.
That is awesome.
You're young enough, you know, so that'll add some years. I'm trying to just stay alive for, you know, 10 years of Assembly Call Radio.
Yeah, so Jen said, yes, most of it is beard weight. Yes.
Yes.
That is in fact true.
All right, y'all. Well, it was fun. It's always good to get on here and work out the emotions in real time in front of hundreds of people. That's
hey, quick story. We're playing Kokomo first game, and I had said something earlier. We were talking about Western basketball and what do you do? We man-to-man team, play a little 1-3-1. I made a guy. I better not say anything because a lot of people watch, and I don't want Kokomo hearing it. So I go to Kokomo, and their scorer, the scorebook dude, the official scorer said, I love watching Assembly Call show, and I just want you to tell – I didn't tell our new coach what you said on Assembly Call radio about what defense you were playing. Because what's said on Assembly Call stays there, even though I'm from Kokomo.
That's
said,
awesome.
Oh, my gosh, thanks.
It's very nice of him.
That is awesome. Thanks, dude. Hey.
So that was pretty cool.
A podcast has got to have a code, and that is our code right there. What is
that's
said
right
on the Assembly Call.
I reveal
call
some secrets.
Stays in the Assembly
Call. stays in here.
That's awesome. By the way, also good for perspective, since we try to be balanced here. Campbell is correct. We took Florida State to overtime last year and said we had some fight. I do remember that.
It's true.
I do remember that. But this does feel
come
different
on, Campbell.
Than that.
I've kind of blacked out last
we appreciate
year,
you, so Campbell, appreciate but come on.
hey, last thing, Ryan, congratulations on the rebirth of USC football.
Thank you.
And thank sorry you. To what all the game fans out there. That was a great hire. And also a great move by Lincoln Riley. Look, what a smart move by him.
I've got some inside, a lot of like inside sources at USC. None of them let me know this was coming because they kept it such a lid on it. And when he says that he only talked to USC on Sunday, he's absolutely telling the truth. Now,
his handlers got it done, didn't it?
They put up a trial balloon early in the year. To him when they fire their coach. And they, you know, that's when you reach out to all the top coaches and like, hey, would you be interested? And Riley was basically like, you know, I'm not going to talk about it during my season. So USC waited until literally the moment his season was over and called his agent and said, hey, what's going on? Is he willing? Wow. And he didn't talk to them. And I think his agent told him what was going on. And then the Sunday morning, he finally talked to them and it all came together in about 12 hours, which is unbelievable. But I guess when they're giving you whatever it is, like $12 million a year, it comes together fast.
I think
that's as good a hire as they could have made.
I've always thought the unfettered movement of college coaches sucks. It's a little bit more equitable now that players can move.
Yes.
But just objectively stepping back, both Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly are making smart decisions.
I completely agree.
I just want to go on the record that I will not be the next host of any kind of Purdue podcast. So next question.
I appreciate that. No, but you're right. And look, the one thing about USC is, first of all, his daughters can go to some of the best private schools in the world in LA. And I think that had a lot to do with it. They're going to live on the beach. They're going to, you know, build their life there if they want to. And the thing is, USC is a world-class university. That's a really easy sell to parents when you're recruiting. You can get the kids
half
with
their recruiting classes from California anyway.
Yeah, you know? And that's the thing.
He's Oklahoma's, I mean. Yeah.
He's been recruiting the hell out of California and Oklahoma, and a bunch of kids already just flipped to about to flip to USC because they wanted to go to USC, but you know, they love USC. They grew up rooting for Reggie Bush and Pete Carroll and all those guys, but USC has been a dumpster fire for so long they couldn't commit there. But yes, I think that I really think that he's making a move. The other move he's making is he's going to the Pac-12, where he will have a backstroke to a college football playoff spot because that conference is so
bad. You underestimate Kalen DeBoer.
I love DeBoer, that hire, by the way. Love that hire. And he's going to get his quarterback, too, who just entered the transfer portal. But no, great. And then look, for Brian Kelly, Notre Dame is a great job. They will get a great replacement head coach. But LSU, you can compete for a national championship every single year with the talent you'll get there. It is a step above what you can get at Notre Dame. And they're paying him $9.5 million a year. And if you know anything about Notre Dame athletics, they are a little bit cheap when it comes to paying for the top coaches. They were not going to match $9 million a year. They weren't going to do it. And so he's doing that. He's getting the Godfather contract, and he's going to a place where, look, if you recruit the way you're supposed to at LSU, you can compete for a national title every single year.
Every coach who goes there wins a national title.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is that Brian Kelly's been close with Notre Dame, but he doesn't get the same players they get in the South. And every time he faces an SEC team, they get smacked. And or Clemson or one of those, you know, Clemson when they're rolling, I mean, they get smacked. And so he wanted to go somewhere. I think he was tired of losing those games because he didn't have the same caliber of player. So he's going to do what he's going to do.
Stuff gets stale after a decade. You know, it's like the Buzz Williams principle: leave after 6-7 years while it's still on the upswing, you know, where they're kind of sorry to see you go.
It's like
Notre Dame wasn't going to get any better than where they've
been. It's like Breaking Bad. They could have gone with Breaking Bad for 20 years. They ended it at a tight, you know, like sometimes you got to do that. And look, credit to Brian Kelly for bringing Notre Dame back. I mean, that place was a mess for so long and they just could not get it straightened out. They couldn't get the right guy. They'd have a little bit of success and then fall off the map. I mean, it just didn't work for a long time and he made it a perennial national power again. And you know what, if Notre Dame, and the other thing, there was the rumors that like, he's been pushing for upgrades to the facilities and everything. And Notre Dame, the administration's pushing back at him and stuff. And I think, you know, after a while you get annoyed with having to push uphill, like, look how much money our football program brings you. You need to, you know, make this better because I can't compete. When I have a recruit coming, I'm dealing with bad weather. A small town that nobody lives in. Yeah, the campus is beautiful, but where are they going to spend most of their time? In the football facility. If it doesn't match up to my opponents, how am I supposed to get this kid and get the kids on the level of a national championship? So I think they both made smart moves. I agree. But I think Oklahoma and Notre Dame will end up with good coaches.
I mean, it's got to be Coach O to OU, right? It's just too perfect.
After what happened at LSU, no, that's not happening.
No Tigers.
Oh,
no Tigers.
There we go. We got a Coach O impression. Very nice. Okay. Well, you came for the IU Syracuse analysis. Stay for the football.
College football. If the back home coin goes like expected, then you're going to buy a house for us in Bloomington called the Assembly Call House. And then we can host our get togethers there. And
somebody will have to live there. Somebody will have to live there at some point all year round.
Yes.
Exactly. And then we could, you know, rent out spare bedrooms, game watch parties.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that's part of the deal.
I think it is. It takes us a while to get there, but we'll get there.
So I'm hosting Thursday night, right?
Cool. Yeah. Yep. Okay. And Tony, so I think, let me double check this, but I think Coach Ajanya will be there, so we'll get his thoughts. He said yes. So he said yes. And then I think Andy's around, which is good. It's always nice to get some new new thoughts on AC Radio from whoever was on the postgame show from the previous one.
All right. And one last question. How was the internet for me? I'm plugged in now.
Great.
But the last time I plugged in, you guys said it was still choppy.
No, you sounded great all night.
I have something to do with hosting, Coach. Because Andy's gets choppy when he hosts, too.
I wonder, I've had to update all that stuff. The
Loopback.
Amoeba. Yeah, and I just updated the music, the Farajo, and it's now compatible with so maybe it wasn't compatible, because I noticed it was always coming out of music. When the music played, then the next minute or two was awfully choppy.
Yeah, Zoom handled music a lot better than StreamYard does. So that could be part of the issue.
So I've done what I could do. I have 45 feet away, and I have 100-foot line running through my house dangerously. So
yeah, and Andy's working hard to get his better too. So okay. I appreciate you guys fighting through that with us. It's not easy to listen to all the time, but we appreciate it.
And my backup plan is just going to my classroom and using the school Wi-Fi.
No, you sounded good. So. Yeah, you sounded good tonight.
You sound good tonight. All right.
All right, gents.
Peace, everybody.
See y'all. Thanks for being here, everybody. Go Hoosiers.
I don't like carrots.
See y'all.
Yeah.